This is Audible.
Sword of Destiny. Written by Andrzej Sapkowski. Translated from the Polish by David French. And read by Peter Kenny. The Bounds of Reason. Chapter 1.
He won't get out of there, I'm telling you,
the pockmarked man said, shaking his head with conviction.
It's been an hour and a quarter since he went down. That's the end of him.
The townspeople, crammed among the ruins, stared in silence at the black hole gaping in the debris, at the rubble-strewn opening. A fat man in a yellow jerkin shifted from one foot to the other, cleared his throat, and took off his crumpled biretta.
"Let's wait a little longer," he said,
wiping the sweat from his thinning eyebrows.
"For what?"
the spotty-faced man snarled.
"Have you forgotten, Alderman, that a basilisk is lurking in that there dungeon? No one who goes in there comes out. Haven't enough people perished? Why wait?"
"But we struck a deal,"
the fat man muttered hesitantly.
"This just isn't right."
"We made a deal with a living man, Alderman," said the spotty-faced man's companion,
a giant in a leather butcher's apron.
"And now he's dead, sure as eggs is eggs. It was plain from the start he was headed to his doom, just like the others. Why, he even went in without a looking glass, taking only a sword. And you can't kill a basilisk without a looking glass. Everyone knows that."
"You saved yourself a shilling, Alderman," the spotty-faced man added, "for there is no one to pay for the basilisk. So, get off home nice and easy, and we'll take the sorcerer's horse and chattels. Shame to let goods go to waste."
"Aye," the butcher said. "A sturdy mare and saddlebags, nicely stuffed. Let's take a peek at what's inside."
"This isn't right. What are you doing?"
"Quiet, Alderman, and stay out of this, or you're in for a hiding," the spotty-faced man warned.
"Sturdy mare," the butcher repeated.
"Leave that horse alone, comrade."
The butcher turned slowly towards the newcomer, who had appeared from a recess in the wall, and the people gathered around the entrance to the dungeon. The stranger had thick, curly chestnut hair. He was wearing a dark brown tunic over a padded coat and high riding boots, and he was not carrying a weapon. "Move away from the horse," he repeated, smiling venomously.
"What is this? Another man's horse, saddlebags and property, and you can't take your watery little eyes off them? Can't wait to get your scabby mitts on them? Is that fitting behaviour?"
The spotty-faced man, slowly sliding a hand under his coat, glanced at the butcher. The butcher nodded and beckoned towards a part of the crowd from which stepped two stocky men with close-cropped hair. They were holding clubs of the kind used to stun animals in a slaughterhouse.
"Who are you?"
the spotty-faced man asked, still holding his hand inside his coat.
"To tell us what is right and what is not?"
"That is not your concern, comrade."
"You carry no weapon?"
"'Tis true."
The stranger smiled even more venomously.
"I do not."
"That's too bad."
The spotty-faced man removed his hand, and with it a long knife from inside his coat.
"It is very unfortunate that you do not."
The butcher also drew a knife as long as a cutlass. The other two men stepped forward, raising their clubs.
"I have no need," the stranger said, remaining where he stood. "My weapons follow me."
Two young women came out from behind the ruins, treading with soft, sure steps. The crowd immediately parted, then stepped back and thinned out. The two women grinned, flashing their teeth and narrowing their eyes, from whose corners broad tattooed stripes ran towards their ears. The muscles of their powerful thighs were visible beneath lynx skins wrapped around their hips and on their sinuous arms, naked above their mail gloves. Sabre hilts stuck up behind their shoulders, which were also protected by chainmail. Slowly, very slowly, the spotty-faced man bent his knees and dropped his knife on the ground. A rattle of stones and a scraping sound echoed from the hole in the rubble, and then two hands, clinging to the jagged edge of the wall, emerged from the darkness. After the hands then appeared, in turn, a head of white hair streaked with brick dust, a pale face and a sword hilt projecting above the shoulders. The crowd murmured. The white-haired man reached down to haul a grotesque shape from the hole, a bizarre bulk smeared in blood-soaked dust. Holding the creature by its long reptilian tail, he threw it without a word at the fat alderman's feet. He sprang back, tripping against a collapsed fragment of wall, and looked at the curved, bird-like beak, webbed wings, and the hooked talons on the scaly feet. At the swollen dewlap, once crimson, now a dirty russet, and at the glazed, sunken eyes.
"There's your basilisk,"
the white-haired man said, brushing the dust from his trousers.
"As agreed. Now, my 200 lintars, if you please. Honest lintars, not too clipped. I'll check them, you can count on it."
The alderman drew out a pouch with trembling hands. The white-haired man looked around, and then fixed his gaze for a moment on the spotty-faced man and the knife lying by his foot. He looked at the man in the dark brown tunic and at the young women in the lynx skins.
"As usual," he said,
taking the pouch from the alderman's trembling hands.
"I risk my neck for you for a paltry sum, and in the meantime you go after my things. You never change. A pox on the lot of you." "Haven't been touched," the butcher muttered, moving back.
The men with the clubs had melted into the crowd long before.
"Your things haven't been touched, sir."
"That pleases me greatly," the white-haired man smiled.
At the sight of the smile burgeoning on his pale face like a wound bursting, the small crowd began to quickly disperse.
"And for that reason, friend, you shall also remain untouched. Go in peace, but make haste."
The spotty-faced man was also retreating. The spots on his white face were unpleasantly conspicuous.
"Hey, stop there," the man in the dark brown tunic said to him. "You've forgotten something."
"What is that, sir?"
"You drew a knife on me."
The taller of the women suddenly swayed, legs planted widely apart, and twisted her hips. Her sabre, which no one saw her draw, hissed sharply through the air. The spotty-faced man's head flew upwards in an arc and fell into the gaping opening to the dungeon. His body toppled stiffly and heavily, like a tree being felled among the crushed bricks. The crowd let out a scream. The second woman, hand on her sword hilt, whirled around nimbly, protecting her partner's back. Needlessly. The crowd, stumbling and falling over on the rubble, fled towards the town as fast as they could. The alderman loped at the front with impressive strides, outdistancing the huge butcher by only a few yards.
"An excellent stroke," the white-haired man commented coldly,
shielding his eyes from the sun with a black-gloved hand.
"An excellent stroke from a Zerikanian sabre. I bow before the skill and beauty of the free warriors. I'm Geralt of Rivia."
"And I," the stranger in the dark brown tunic pointed at the faded coat of arms on the front of his garment, depicting three black birds sitting in a row in the centre of a uniformly gold field. "Amborch, also known as Three Jackdaws. And these are my girls, Thea and Vea. That's what I call them, because you'll twist your tongue on their right names. They are both, as you correctly surmised, Zerikanian."
"Thanks to them, it appears, I still have my horse and belongings. Thank you, warriors. My thanks to you too, sir."
"Three Jackdaws, and you can drop the sir. Does anything detain you in this little town, Geralt of Rivia?"
"Quite the opposite."
"Excellent. I have a proposal. Not far from here, at the crossroads on the road to the riverport, is an inn. It's called the Pensive Dragon. The victuals there have no equal in these parts. I'm heading there with food and lodging in mind. It would be my honour should you choose to keep me company."
"Borch."
The white-haired man turned around from his horse and looked into the stranger's bright eyes.
"I wouldn't want anything left unclear between us. I'm a witcher."
"I guessed as much, but you said it as you might have said, I'm a leper."
"There are those," Geralt said slowly, "who prefer the company of lepers to that of a witcher."
"There are also those," Three Jackdaws laughed, "who prefer sheep to girls. Ah, well, one can only sympathize with the former and the latter. I repeat my proposal."
Geralt took off his glove and shook the hand being proffered.
I accept. Glad to have made your acquaintance. Then let us go, for I hunger.
Chapter 2 The innkeeper wiped the rough tabletop with a cloth, bowed and smiled. Two of his front teeth were missing.
Right, then.
Three jackdaws looked up for a while at the blackened ceiling and the spiders dancing about beneath it.
First beer, to save your legs, an entire keg, and to go with the beer... What do you propose with the beer, comrade?
Cheese?
Risked the innkeeper.
No, Boch grimaced. We'll have cheese for dessert. We want something sour and spicy with the beer.
At your service.
The innkeeper smiled even more broadly. His two front teeth were not the only ones he lacked.
Elvers with garlic in olive oil and green pepper pods in vinegar or marinated.
Very well. We'll take both. And then that soup I once ate here with diverse mollusks, little fish and other tasty morsels floating in it.
Log driver soup?
The very same. And then roast lamb with onions, and then 3 score crayfish. Throw as much dill into the pot as you can. After that, sheep's cheese and lettuce. And then we'll see.
At your service. Is that for everyone? I mean, 4 times?
The taller Zerikanian shook her head, patting herself knowingly on her waist, which was now hugged by a tight linen blouse.
I forgot. 3 jackdaws winked at Geralt. The girls are watching their figures. Lamb just for the 2 of us, innkeeper. Serve the beer right now, with those elvers. No, wait a while, so they don't go cold. We didn't come here to stuff ourselves, but simply to spend some time in conversation.
Very good.
The innkeeper bowed once more. Prudence is a matter of import in your profession. Give me your hand, comrade. Gold coins jingled. The innkeeper opened his gap-toothed mouth to the limit.
That is not an advance, 3 jackdaws announced. It is a bonus. And now hurry off to the kitchen, good fellow.
It was warm in the snug. Geralt unbuckled his belt, took off his tunic and rolled up his shirt sleeves.
I see, he said, that you aren't troubled by a shortage of funds. Do you live on the privileges of a knightly estate?
Partially.
3 jackdaws smiled, without offering further details. They dealt quickly with the elvers and 1/4 of the keg. Neither of the 2 Zerikanians stinted on the beer, and soon were both in visible good humour. They were whispering something to each other. Vea, the taller one, suddenly burst out in throaty laughter.
"Are the warriors versed in the common speech?"
Geralt asked quietly, sneaking a sideways glance at them.
"Poorly. And they are not garrulous, for which they deserve credit. How do you find the soup, Geralt?" Let us drink. Geralt,
3 jackdaws began, putting aside his spoon and hiccuping in a dignified manner.
I wish to return, for a moment, to the conversation we had on the road. I understand that you, a witcher, wander from one end of the world to the other, and should you come across a monster along the way, you kill it. And you earn money doing that. Does that describe the witcher's trade?
More or less.
And does it ever happen that someone specifically summons you somewhere, on a special commission, let's say?
Then what? You go and carry it out? That depends on who asks me and why.
And for how much?
That too.
The witcher shrugged.
Prices are going up, and one has to live, as a sorcerer's acquaintance of mine used to say.
Quite a selective approach.
Very practical, I'd say.
But at the root of it lies some idea, Geralt. The conflict between the forces of order and the forces of chaos, as a sorcerer acquaintance of mine used to say. I imagine that you carry out your mission, defending people from evil, always and everywhere, without distinction. You stand on a clearly defined side of the palisade.
The forces of order, the forces of chaos. Awfully high-flown words, Boch.
You desperately want to position me on one side of the palisade in a conflict which is generally thought to be perennial, began long before us, and will endure long after we've gone. on which side does the farrier, shoeing horses, stand? Or our innkeeper, hurrying here with a cauldron of lamb? What, in your opinion, defines the border between chaos and order?
A very simple thing, said Three Jackdaws, and looked him straight in the eye. That which represents chaos is menace, is the aggressive side, while order is the side being threatened, in need of protection, in need of a defender. But let us drink, and make a start on the lamb.
Rightly said.
The Zeracanians, watching their figures, were taking a break from eating, time they spent drinking more quickly. Vera, leaning over on her companion's shoulder, whispered something again, brushing the tabletop with her plait. Thea, the shorter of the two, laughed loudly, cheerfully, narrowing her tattooed eyelids.
Yes, Borch said, picking a bone clean. Let us continue our talk, if you will. I understand you aren't keen on being placed on either side. You do your job.
That's correct.
But you cannot escape the conflict between chaos and order. Although it was your comparison, you are not a farrier. I've seen you work. You go down into a dungeon among some ruins and come out with a slaughtered basilisk. There is, comrade, a difference between shoeing horses and killing basilisks. You said that if the payment is fair, you'll hurry to the end of the world and dispatch the monster you're asked to. Let's say a fierce dragon is wreaking havoc on a bad example, Geralt interrupted.
You see, right away, you've mixed up chaos and order, because I do not kill dragons, and they, without doubt, represent chaos.
How so?
Three Jackdaws licked his fingers.
Well, I never. After all, among all monsters, dragons are probably the most bestial, the cruelest and fiercest, the most revolting of reptiles. They attack people, breathe fire and carry off, you know, virgins. There's no shortage of tales like that. It can't be that you, a witcher, don't have a few dragons on your trophy list.
I don't hunt dragons, Geralt said dryly. I hunt folk tales, for sure, and drake lizards, and flying drakes, but not true dragons, the green, the black, or the red. Take note, please.
You astonish me, Three Jackdaws said. Very well, I've taken note. In any case, that's enough about dragons for the moment. I see something red on the horizon, and it is surely our crayfish. Let us drink.
Their teeth crunched through the red shells, and they sucked out the white flesh. The salt water, stinging painfully, trickled down over their wrists. Borch poured the beer, by now scraping the ladle across the bottom of the keg. The Zeracanians were even more cheerful, the two of them looking around the inn and smiling ominously. The Witcher was convinced they were searching out an opportunity for a brawl. Three Jackdaws must also have noticed, because he suddenly shook a crayfish he was holding by the tail at them. The women giggled, and Tyr pouted her lips for a kiss and winked. Combined with her tattooed face, this made for a gruesome sight.
They are as savage as wildcats, Three Jackdaws murmured to Geralt. They need watching. With them, comrade, suddenly, before you know it, the floor's covered in guts. But they're worth every penny, if you knew what they're capable of.
I know, Geralt nodded. You couldn't find a better escort. Zeracanians are born warriors, trained to fight from childhood.
I didn't mean that.
Borch spat a crayfish claw onto the table.
I meant what they're like in bed.
Geralt glanced anxiously at the women. They both smiled. Vera reached for the dish with a swift, almost imperceptible movement. Looking at the Witcher through narrowed eyes, she bit open a shell with a crack. Her lips glistened with the salt water. Three Jackdaws belched loudly.
And so, Geralt, he said, you don't hunt dragons, neither green nor any other color. I've made a note of it. And why, may I ask, only those three colors?
Four, to be precise.
You mentioned three.
Dragons interest you, Borch. For any particular reason?
No, pure curiosity.
Uh-huh. Well, about those colors, it's customary to define true dragons like that, although they're not precise terms. Green dragons, the most common,
are actually greyish, like ordinary Draco lizards. Red dragons are in fact reddish or brick red. It's customary to call the large dark brown ones black. White dragons are the rarest. I've never seen one. They occur in the distant north, reputedly.
Interesting. And do you know what other dragons I've also heard about?
I do.
Geralt sipped his beer.
The same ones I've heard about. Golden dragons. There are no such creatures.
On what grounds do you claim that?
Because you've never seen one. Apparently you haven't seen a white one either. That's not the point.
Beyond the seas, in Ophir and Zangvibar, there are white horses with black stripes.
I haven't seen them, but I know they exist.
But golden dragons are mythical creatures, fabled. Like the phoenix, let's say. There are no phoenixes or golden dragons.
Vea, leaning on her elbows, looked at him curiously. You must know what you're talking about. You're a witcher.
Borg ladled beer from the keg.
But I think that every myth, every fable must have some roots.
Something lies among those roots.
It does, Geralt confirmed. Most often a dream, a wish, a desire, a yearning. Faith that there are no limits to possibility, and occasionally chance.
Precisely. Chance. Perhaps there once was a golden dragon, an accidental, unique mutation.
If there were, it met the fate of all mutants.
The Witcher turned his head away.
It differed too much to endure.
Ha! Huh? Three Jackdaws said. Now you are denying the laws of nature, Geralt. My sorcerer acquaintance was wont to say that every being has its own continuation in nature, and survives in some way or another. The end of one is the beginning of another. There are no limits to possibility. Or at least nature doesn't know any.
Your sorcerer acquaintance was a great optimist, but he failed to take one thing into consideration, a mistake committed by nature, or by those who trifle with it. Golden dragons and other similar mutants, were they to exist, couldn't survive, for a very natural limit of possibilities prevents it.
What limit is that?
Mutants. The muscles in Geralt's jaw twitched violently.
Mutants are sterile, Borg. Only in fables survives what cannot survive in nature. Only myths and fables do not know the limits of possibility.
Three Jackdaws said nothing. Geralt looked at the Zeracanians, at their faces suddenly grown serious. Vea unexpectedly leant over towards him and put a hard, muscular arm around his neck. He felt her lips wet from beer on his cheek.
They like you,
Three Jackdaws said slowly.
Well, I'll be damned. They like you.
What's strange about that?
The Witcher smiled sadly.
Nothing, but we must drink to it. Innkeeper, another keg.
Take it easy, a pitcher at most.
Two pitchers, Three Jackdaws yelled. Thea, I have to go out for a while.
The Zeracanian stood up, took her sabre from the bench, and swept the room with a wistful gaze. Although previously, as the Witcher had observed, several pairs of eyes had lit up greedily at the sight of Borg's bulging purse, no one seemed in a hurry to go after him as he staggered slightly towards the door to the courtyard. Tyr shrugged, following her employer.
"What is your real name?"
Geralt asked the one who had remained at the table. Vea flashed her white teeth. Her blouse was very loosely laced, almost to the limits of possibility. The Witcher had no doubt it was intentionally provocative.
Elviernirli.
Pretty.
The Witcher was sure the Zeracanian would purse her lips and wink at him. He was not mistaken.
Vea?
Hmm?
Why do you ride with Borg, you free warriors? Would you mind telling me?
Hmm?
What?
He is...
The Zeracanian, frowning, searched for the words.
He is the most beautiful.
The Witcher nodded. Not for the first time, the criteria by which women judged the attractiveness of men remained a mystery to him. Three jackdaws lurched back into the snug, fastening his trousers, and issued loud instructions to the innkeeper. Thea, walking two steps behind him, feigning boredom, looked around the inn, and the merchants and log drivers carefully avoided her gaze. Lea was sucking the contents from another crayfish and continually throwing the witcher meaningful glances. "I've ordered us an eel each, baked this time." Three jackdaws sat down heavily, his unfastened belt clinking. "I struggled with those crayfish and seem to have worked up an appetite. And I've organized a bed for you, Geralt. There's no sense in you roaming around tonight. We can still amuse ourselves. Here's to you, girls."
"Vesechial,"
Lea said, saluting him with her beaker. Thea winked and stretched, and her bosom, contrary to Geralt's expectations, did not split the front of her blouse.
"Let's make merry."
Three jackdaws leant across the table and slapped Thea on the backside.
"Let's make merry, witcher. Hey, a landlord, over here."
The innkeeper scuttled briskly over, wiping his hands on his apron.
"Could you lay your hands on a tub, the kind you laundered the clothes in? Sturdy and large?"
"How large, sir?"
"For four people."
For four?
The innkeeper opened his mouth.
"For four?"
Three jackdaws confirmed, drawing a full purse from his pocket.
"I could."
The innkeeper licked his lips.
"Splendid," Borch laughed. "Have it carried upstairs to my room and filled with hot water. With all speed, comrade. And have beer brought there too. Three pitchers."
The Zeracanians giggled and winked at the same time.
"Which one do you prefer?" Three jackdaws asked. "Eh, Geralt?"
The witcher scratched the back of his head.
"I know. It's difficult to choose," said Three Jackdaws understandingly. "I occasionally have difficulty myself. Never mind. We'll give it some thought in the tub. Hey, girls, help me up the stairs."
Chapter 3. There was a barrier on the bridge. The way was barred by a long, solid beam set on wooden trestles. In front and behind it stood halberdiers in studded leather coats and mail hoods. A purple banner bearing the emblem of a silver griffin fluttered lazily above the barrier.
"What the devil?"
Three jackdaws said in surprise, approaching at a walk.
"Is there no way through?"
"Course I've conduct,"
the nearest halberdier asked, without taking the stick he was chewing, either from hunger or to kill time, from his mouth.
"Sif conduct? What is it? The plague? Or war, perhaps? On whose orders do you obstruct the way?"
"Those of King Nidamere, Lord of Cairngorm,"
the guardsman replied, shifting the stick to the other side of his mouth and pointing at the banner.
"Without a safe conduct, you can't go up."
"Some sort of idiocy," Geralt said in a tired voice. "This isn't Cairngorm, but Barefield's territory. Barefield, not Cairngorm, levies tolls from the bridges on the Brae. What has Nidamere to do with it?"
"Don't ask me," the guard said, spitting out his stick. "Not my business. I'm here to check safe conduct. If you want, talk to our decurion."
"And where might he be?"
"He's basking in the sun over there, behind the toll collector's lodgings," the halberdier said, looking not at Geralt, but at the naked thighs of the Zeracanians, who were stretching languidly in their saddles.
Behind the toll collector's cottage sat a guard on a pile of dry logs, drawing a woman in the sand with the end of his halberd. It was actually a certain part of a woman, seen from an unusual perspective. Beside him, a slim man with a fanciful plum bonnet pulled down over his eyes, adorned with a silver buckle and a long, twitching heron's feather, was reclining, gently plucking the strings of a lute. Geralt knew that bonnet and that feather, which were famed from the Buina to the Yoruga, known in manor houses, fortresses, inns, taverns, and whorehouses, particularly whorehouses.
"Dandelion! Geralt the Witcher!"
A pair of cheerful cornflower blue eyes shone from under the bonnet, now shoved back on his head.
"Well, I never! You're here too? You don't have a safe conduct by any chance?"
"What's everyone's problem with this safe conduct?"
The witcher dismounted.
"What's happening here, Dandelion? We wanted to cross the Brea, myself and this knight, Borch, three jackdaws, and our escort, and we cannot, it appears."
"I can't either."
Dandelion stood up,
took off his bonnet and bowed to the Zerikanians with exaggerated courtesy. They don't want to let me cross either. This Decurion here won't let me. Dandelion, the most celebrated minstrel and poet within 1,000 miles, through, although he's also an artist, as you can see.
I won't let anyone cross without a safe conduct, the Decurion said resolutely,
at which he completed his drawing with a final detail, prodding the end of his halberd shaft in the sand.
No matter, the Witcher said. We'll ride along the left bank. The road to Hengfors is longer that way, but needs must.
To Hengfors? The bard said, surprised. Aren't you following Nidamir, Geralt, and the dragon?
What dragon? Three Jackdaws asked with interest.
You don't know? You really don't know? Oh, I shall have to tell you everything, gentlemen. I'm waiting here, in any case. Perhaps someone who knows me will come with a safe conduct and let me join them. Please be seated.
Just a moment, Three Jackdaws said. The sun is almost a quarter to the noontide, and I have an awful thirst. We cannot talk on an empty stomach.
There, head back to the town at a trot and buy a keg.
I like the cut of your jib, sire.
Borch, also known as Three Jackdaws.
Dandelion, also known as the Unparalleled, by certain girls.
Talk, Dandelion, the Witcher said impatiently. We aren't going to loiter around here till evening.
The bard seized the fingerboard of his lute and plucked the strings vigorously.
How would you prefer it, in verse or in normal speech?
Normal speech.
As you please,
Dandelion said, not putting his lute down.
Listen then, noble gentleman, to what occurred a week ago near the free town of Bearfield. 'Twas thus that at the crack of dawn, when the rising sun had barely tinged pink, the shrouds of mist hanging pendant above the meadows,
it was supposed to be normal speech,
Geralt reminded him.
Isn't it? Very well, very well. I understand. Concise without metaphors. A dragon alighted on the pastures outside Bearfield.
Oh, come on, the Witcher said. It doesn't seem very likely to me. No one has seen a dragon in these parts for years. Wasn't it just a common old garden draco lizard? Draco lizard specimens can occasionally be as large as...
Don't insult me, Witcher. I know what I'm talking about. I saw it. As luck would have it, I was at the market in Bearfield and saw it all with my own eyes. The ballads composed, but you didn't want
go on. Was it big?
The length of 3 horses. No taller than a horse at the withers, but much fatter. Sand grey.
In other words, green.
Yes. It swooped down unexpectedly, flew right into a flock of sheep, scattered the shepherds, did for about 12 beasts, devoured 4 of them and flew away.
Flew away.
Geralt shook his head.
And that was all?
No, because it came again the next day, this time nearer to the town. It swooped down on a knot of women washing their linen on the banks of the Brea. And how they bolted, old friend. I've never laughed so much. Then the dragon circled Bearfield a couple of times and flew towards the pastures, where it fell on the sheep again. Only then did the chaos and confusion begin, because few had believed the herdsman before. The mayor called out the town constabulary and the guilds, but before they could form up, the plebs took matters into their own hands and did for it.
How?
In a forceful peasant manner. The local master cobbler, a certain sheep-bagger, came up with a way of dealing with the brute. They killed a sheep, stuffed it full of hellebore, deadly nightshade, poison, parsley, brimstone and cobbler's tar. But just to be sure, the local apothecary poured in 2 quarts of his concoction for carbuncles, and the priest from the temple of Creva said prayers over the carcass. Then they stood the poisoned sheep among the flock, held up by a stake. If truth be told, no one believed the dragon would be lured by that shit, which stank to high heaven. But reality surpassed our expectations. Ignoring the living and bleating bar lambs, the reptile swallowed the bait and the stake.
And what then? Go on, Dandelion.
What do you think I'm doing? I am telling you. Listen to what happened next. In less time than a skilled man needs to unlace a woman's corset, the dragon suddenly began to roar and vent smoke from its front and rear ends. It turned somersaults, tried to take off, and then collapsed and lay still. 2 volunteers set off to check whether the poisoned reptile was still breathing. It was the local gravedigger and the town half-wit. the fruit of the union between the retired daughter of a woodcutter and a squad of hired pikemen who marched through Bearfield at the time of Warlord Nelumbo's rebellion.
Now you're lying, Dandelion.
Not lying, just embellishing, and there's a difference.
Not much of one. Speak on, we're wasting time.
Well then, as I was saying, the gravedigger and the doughty idiot set off as scouts. Afterwards, we built them a small but pleasing burial mound.
Aha, Bor said. That means the dragon was still alive.
And how? Dandelion said cheerfully. It was alive, but it was so weak it didn't devour either the gravedigger or the halfwit. It just lapped up their blood. And then, to general consternation, it flew away, taking flight with some difficulty. Every furlong it fell with a clatter and then rose again. It walked occasionally, dragging its back legs. Some courageous individuals followed it, keeping it in view. And do you know what?
Speak, Dandelion.
The dragon disappeared among the ravines of the Kestrel Mountains, near the source of the Brea, and hid in the caves there.
Now everything's clear, Geralt said. The dragon has probably lived in those caves for centuries, in a state of torpor. I've heard of cases like that, and his treasure hoard must be there too. Now I know why they're blocking the bridge. Someone wants to get his greedy hands on the treasure, and that someone is Nidamir of Cairngorm.
Exactly, the troubadour confirmed. The whole of Bearfield is fair seething for that reason, because they claim that the dragon and its hoard belongs to them. But they hesitate to cross Nidamir. Nidamir's a young whelp who hasn't started shaving, but he's already proved it doesn't pay to fall foul of him. And he wants that dragon like the very devil, which is why he's reacted so fast.
Wants the treasure, you mean?
Actually, more the dragon than the treasure. For you see, Nidamir has his eye on the kingdom of Maliore. A princess of a, so to speak, beddable age was left there after the sudden and odd death of the prince. The noblemen of Maliore look on Nidamir and the other suitors with reluctance, for they know that the new ruler will keep them on a short leash, unlike the callow princess. So they dug up some dusty old prophecy saying that the mitre and the lass's hand belong to the man who vanquishes the dragon. Because no one has seen a dragon there for ages, they thought they were safe. Nidamir, of course, laughed at the legend, took Maliore by force, and that was that. But when the news of the Bearfield dragon got out, he realized he could hoist the Maliore nobility by their own petard. If he showed up there clutching the dragon's head, the people would greet him like a monarch sent by the gods, and the nobleman wouldn't dare breathe a word. Does it surprise you, then, that he rushed after the dragon like a scalded cat? Particularly since it's dead on its feet. For him, it's a real godsend, a stroke of luck by thunder.
And he shot the competition out.
So it would appear. And the people of Bearfield, except that he sent riders with safe conduct throughout the countryside. They're for the ones who are supposed to actually kill the dragon, because Nidamir himself is in no hurry to walk into a cave wielding a sword. In a flash, he drafted in the most renowned dragon slayers. You probably know most of them, Geralt.
Possibly. Who's turned up?
Ike of Denizla, to begin with.
Damn.
The Witcher whistled softly.
The pious and virtuous Ike, an Ike without flaw or blemish in person.
Do you know him, Geralt? Bork asked. Is he really the scourge of dragons?
Not just dragons. Ike is a match for any monster. He's even killed manticores and griffins. He's dispatched a few dragons, so I've heard. He's good. But he spoils my business, the swine, because he doesn't take any money for it. Who else, Dandelion?
The Crinfield Reavers.
Well, that's the dragon done for. Even if it has recovered, that trio are a good team. They fight pretty dirty, but they're effective. They've wiped out all the Draco lizards and Forktails in Redania, not to mention 3 red and 1 black dragon, which they also dispatched. And that's no mean feat. Is that everybody?
No. 6 dwarves under the command of Yarpin Zigrin have joined in.
I don't know him.
But you have heard of the dragon Okvist from Quartz Mountain?
Yes, and I saw some gemstones from its hoard. There are sapphires of remarkable colour and diamonds as large as cherries.
Well, know you that, because Yarpin Zigrid and his dwarves did for Okvist. A ballad was composed about it, but it was lousy because it wasn't one of mine. You've missed nothing if you haven't heard it.
Is that everybody?
Yes, not counting you. You claim not to know about the dragon. Who knows? Perhaps that's true. But now you do. Well?
Nothing. That dragon doesn't interest me.
Ha! Very crafty, Geralt. Because you don't have a safe conduct anyway.
The dragon doesn't interest me, I told you. But what about you, Dandelion? What draws you here?
The usual. The troubadour shrugged. I need to be near the action and the excitement. Everyone will be talking about the fight with the dragon. Of course, I could compose a ballad based on reports, but it'll sound different sung by someone who saw the fight with his own eyes.
Fight?
Three jackdaws laughed. More like some kind of pig-sticking or a carcass being quartered. I'm listening, and I'm astounded. Celebrated warriors rushing here as fast as they can to finish off a half-dead dragon poisoned by a peasant? It makes me want to laugh and vomit.
You're wrong, Geralt said. If the dragon hasn't expired from the poison, its constitution has probably already fought it off, and it's back at full strength. It actually doesn't make much difference. The Kringfrid Reavers will kill it anyway, but it'll put up a fight, if you want to know.
So you're betting on the Reavers, Geralt?
Naturally.
Don't be so sure.
The artistic guard, who'd been silent up to then, spoke up.
A dragon is a magical creature, and you can't kill it any other way than with spells. If anybody can deal with it, then it's that sorceress who rode through yesterday.
Who was that?
Geralt cocked his head.
A sorceress, the guard repeated. I told you.
Did she give her name?
She did, but I've forgotten it. She had a safe conduct. She was young, comely in her own way, but those eyes. You know how it is, sire. You come over all cold when they look at you.
Know anything about this, Dandelion? Who could it be?
No, the bard grimaced. Young, comely, and those eyes. Some help that is. They're all like that. Not one of them that I know, and I know plenty, looks older than 25, 30. Though some of them, I've heard, can recall the times when the forest soughed as far as where Novigrad stands today. Anyway, what are elixirs and mandrake for? And they also sprinkle mandrake in their eyes to make them shine, as women will.
Was her hair red? The witcher asked.
No, Zaya, the Decurion said. Coal black.
And her horse. What colour was it? Chestnut with a white star.
No, black, like her hair. Well, gentlemen, I'm telling you, she'll kill the dragon. A dragon's a job for a sorcerer. Human strength isn't enough against it.
I wonder what the cobbler sheepbagger would have to say about that, Dandelion laughed. If he'd had something stronger to hand than hellebore and deadly nightshade, the dragon's skin would be drying on the Bearfield stockade. The ballad would be ready, and I wouldn't be fading in this sun.
Why exactly didn't Nidamir take you with him? Geralt asked, looking askance at the poet. You were in Bearfield when he set off, after all. Could it be that the king doesn't like artists? How come you're fade in here, instead of strumming an air by the royal stirrups?
The cause was a certain young widow, Dandelion said dejectedly.
The hell with it. I tarried, and the next day Nidamir and the others were already over the river. They even took that sheep-bagger with them, and some scouts from the Bearfield Constabulary. They just forgot about me. I've explained it to the Decurion, but he keeps repeating, "If there's a safe conduct, I'll let you through," the Halberdier said dispassionately, relieving himself on the wall of the toll collector's cottage.
If there isn't, I don't let you through. I've got me orders.
Oh, three jackdaws interrupted him. The girls are returning with the beer.
And they aren't alone, Dandelion added, standing up. Look at that horse, big as a dragon.
The Zeracanians galloped up from the birchwood, flanking a rider sitting on a large, restless warhorse. The witcher also stood up. The rider was wearing a long purple velvet caftan with silver braid and a short coat trimmed with sable fur. Sitting erect in the saddle, he looked imperiously down at them. Geralt knew that kind of look, and was not fond of it.
"Greetings, gentlemen. I am Doregre."
The rider introduced himself, dismounting slowly and with dignity.
"Master Doregre, sorcerer."
"Master Geralt, witcher."
"Master Dandelion, poet."
"Borg, also known as Three Jackdaws, and my girls, who are removing the bung from that keg, you have already met, Master Doregre."
That is so indeed, the sorceress said without a smile. We exchanged bows, I and the beautiful warriors from Zerikania. Well then, cheers.
Dandelion distributed the leather cups brought by Veer. Drink with us, Master Sorcerer. My Lord Borg, shall I also serve the Decurion?
Of course. Join us, soldier.
I presume, the sorceress said, after taking a small, distinguished sip, that the same purpose has brought you gentlemen to the barrier on the bridge as it has me.
If you have the dragon in mind, Master Dorigere, Dandelion said, that is so indeed. I want to be there and compose a ballad. Unfortunately, that Decurion there, clearly a fellow without refinement, doesn't want to let me through. He demands a safe conduct.
I beg your pardon, the halberdier said, draining his cup and smacking his lips. I've been ordered on pain of death not to let anyone through without a safe conduct. And I'm told the whole of Bearfield has already gathered with wagons and plans to head after the dragon. I have my orders.
Your orders, soldier, Dorigere frowned, apply to the rabble who might hinder, trollops who might spread debauchery and foul sicknesses, thieves, scum and rabble, but not to me.
I won't let anyone through without a safe conduct, the Decurion glowered. I swear,
don't swear. Three jackdaws interrupted him. Better to have another drink. Taya, pour this stout-hearted soldier a beer, and let us be seated, gentlemen. Drinking standing up in a rush and without due reverence does not become the nobility.
They sat down on logs around the keg. The halberdier, newly raised to nobility, blushed with pleasure.
Drink, brave centurion, three jackdaws urged.
But I am a decurion, not a centurion, the halberdier said, blushing even more intensely.
But you will be a centurion for certain, Borg grinned. You're an astute fellow. You'll be promoted in no time.
Dorigere, declining a refill, turned towards Geralt.
People are still talking about the basilisk in town, witcher sir. And you now have your eye on the dragon, I see, he said softly. I wonder whether you're so short of money, or whether you murder endangered creatures for the simple pleasure of it.
Curious interest, Geralt answered, coming from someone who is rushing not to be late for the butchering of a dragon, in order to knock out its teeth, so crucial, after all, in the making of magical cures and elixirs. Is it true, sorcerer sir, that the best ones are those removed from a living dragon?
Are you certain that is why I am going there?
I am. But someone has already beaten you to it, Dorigere. A female companion of yours has already gone through with a safe conduct, which you don't have. She is black-haired, if that's of any interest to you.
On a black horse?
Apparently.
Yennefer,
Dorigere said glumly. Unnoticed by anybody, the witcher twitched. A silence fell, broken only by the belching of the future centurion.
Nobody without a safe conduct. Will 200 lintar suffice?
Geralt calmly took from his pocket the purse received from the fat alderman.
Ah, Geralt.
Three jackdaws smiled mysteriously.
So you... My apologies, Bok. I'm sorry, but I won't ride with you to Hengfors. Another time, perhaps. Perhaps we'll meet again.
I have no interest in going to Hengfors, three jackdaws said slowly. Not at all, Geralt.
Put away that purse, sire, the future centurion said menacingly. That's sheer bribery. I won't even let you through for 300.
And for 500?
Borg took out his pouch.
Put away that purse, Geralt. I'll pay the toll. This has begun to amuse me. 500 soldiers, sir? 100 apiece, counting my girls as one gorgeous item. What?
Oh, dear, oh, dear, the future centurion said, distressed, stowing Bork's pouch away under his jacket. What will I tell the king?
Tell him,
Dorigere said, straightening up and removing an ornate ivory wand from his belt,
that you were overcome by fear when you saw it.
Saw what, sire?
The sorcerer flourished his wand and shouted an incantation. A pine tree on the riverbank burst into flames. In one moment, the entire tree was engulfed from top to bottom in a blaze of fire.
To horse!
cried Dandelion, springing up and slinging his lute across his back. "To horse, gentlemen and ladies!"
"Raise the barrier!"
The rich Decurion, with a good chance of becoming a centurion, shouted to the halberdiers. On the bridge, beyond the barrier, Thea reined in her horse. It skittered, hooves thudding on the planking. The woman, tossing her plaits, screamed piercingly.
"That's right, Thea!" three jackdaws shouted back. "Onwards, my lords, to horse! We'll ride in the Zeracanian fashion, with a thundering and a yelling."
Chapter 4
"Well, just look,"
said the oldest of the reavers, Bolholt, massive and burly, like the trunk of an old oak tree.
"So, Nidamere didn't chase you away, my good sirs, though I was certain he would. But it's not for us paupers to question royal commands. Join us by the campfire. Make yourselves a pallet, boys. And between you and me, Witcher, what did you talk to the king about?"
"About nothing,"
Geralt said, making himself comfortable by leaning back against his saddle, which he had dragged over beside the fire.
"He didn't even come out of his tent to talk to us. He just sent that flunky of his. What's his name?"
"Gillenstuen,"
said Jarpen Zigrin, a stocky bearded dwarf who was rolling a huge resinous tree stump he had dragged from the undergrowth into the fire.
"Pompous upstart, fat hog. When we joined the hunt, he came over, nose stuck up towards the heavens. 'Poo-poo, remember you dwarves,' he says. 'Who's in command? Who you have to obey? King Nidamere gives the orders here, and his word is law,' and so on. I stood and listened, and I thought to myself, 'I'll have my lads knock him to the ground, and I'll piss all over his cape.' But I dropped the idea, you know, because word would get around again that dwarves are nasty, that we're aggressive, that they're horse sons, and it's impossible to live with them in... what the hell was it? Ammonium, or wherever it was. And right away there'd be another pogrom somewhere, in some little town or other. So I just listened politely and nodded."
"It looks like that's all Lord Gillenstein knows," Geralt said, "because he said the same to us, and all we did was nod too."
"And I reckon," the second reaver said, spreading a blanket over a pile of brushwood, "it was a bad thing Nidamere didn't chase you away. Doesn't bear thinking how many people are after this dragon. Swarms of them. It's not a hunting expedition no more. It's a funeral procession. I need elbow room when I'm fighting."
"Come off it, Gar," Boholt said. "The more the merrier. What, never hunted a dragon before? There's always a swarm of people behind a dragon, a noisy rabble, a veritable bordello on wheels. But when the reptile shows up, guess who's left standing in the field? Us, that's who."
Boholt was silent for a moment, took a long draw from a large wicker-bound demijohn, blew his nose loudly and coughed.
"Another thing," he continued. "In practice, it's often only after the dragon's been killed that the merrymaking and bloodletting begins and the heads start rolling. It's only when the treasure's being shared out that the hunters go for each other's throats. Right, Geralt? Aye, am I right? Witcher, I'm talking to you."
"I'm aware of cases like that," Geralt concurred dryly.
"Aware, you say? No doubt from hearsay, because I can't say I've ever heard of you stalking a dragon. Never in all my born days have I heard of a witcher hunting dragons, which makes it all the stranger you're here."
"True," drawled Kennet, also known as Beanpole, the youngest reaver. "That's strange, and we—"
"Wait, Beanpole, I'm talking," Boholt cut in. "And besides, I don't plan to talk for too long. Anyway, the witcher knows what I'm on about. I know him, and he knows me, and up to now we haven't got in each other's way, and we probably never will. You see, lad, if I wanted to disrupt the witcher's work, or snatch the loot from under his nose, the witcher would waste no time slashing me with that witcher razor of his, and he'd be within his rights. Agreed?"
No one seconded or challenged this. There was nothing to suggest that Boholt cared either way.
"Aye," he continued, "the more the merrier, as I said. And the witcher may prove useful to the company. It's wild and deserted around here, and should a frightener or Iliocaris or a strigger jump out at us, there might be trouble. But if Geralt's standing by, there won't be any trouble, because that's his speciality. But dragons aren't his speciality. Right?"
Once more, no one seconded or challenged this.
"Lord Three Jackdaws is with Geralt,"
continued Boholt, handing the demijohn to Yarpen.
"And that's enough of a guarantee for me. So, who's bothering you, Gar, Beanpole? Can't be Dandelion, can it?"
"Dandelion?" Yarpen Zigrin said, passing the demijohn to the bard. "Always tags along whenever something interesting's happening, and everybody knows he doesn't interfere, doesn't help, and won't slow the march down. Bit like a burr on a dog's tail, right, boys?"
The boys, stocky bearded dwarves, cackled, shaking their beards. Dandelion pushed his bonnet back and drank from the demijohn.
"Bloody hell," he groaned, gasping for air. "It takes your voice away. What was it distilled from? Scorpions?"
"There's one thing irking me, Geralt," Beanpole said, taking the demijohn from the minstrel. "And that's you bringing that sorcerer along. We can hardly move for sorcerers."
"That's true," the dwarf butted in. "Beanpole's right. We need that Dorigeri like a pig needs a saddle. For some time now we've had our very own witch, the noble Yennefer." "Ugh."
He spat her name.
"Yes, indeed," Boholt said,
scratching himself on his bull neck, from which a moment earlier he'd unfastened a leather collar, bristling with steel studs.
"There are too many sorcerers here, gentlemen. Too many, to be precise. And they're a sight too thick with our Nidamere. Just look, we are under the stars and under fire, and they, gentlemen, are in the warm, plotting in the royal tent, the cunning foxes. Nidamere, the witch, the wizard, and Gillenstern. And Yennefer's the worst. And do you want to know what they're plotting? How to cheat us, that's what."
"Ain't stuffing themselves with venison," Beanpole interjected gloomily. "And what did we eat? Marmot. And what's a marmot, I ask you? A rat, nothing else. So what have we eaten? Rat."
"Never mind," Garth said. "We'll soon be sampling dragon's tail. There's nothing like dragon's tail roasted over charcoal." "Yennefer," Boholt went on, "is a foul, nasty, mouthy bint. Not like your lasses, Lord Bork. They are quiet and agreeable. Just look, they've sat down by the horses. They're sharpening their sabres. I walked past, said something witty. They smiled and showed their little teeth. Yes, I'm glad they're here. Not like Yennefer. All she does is scheme and scheme. And I tell you, we have to watch out, because we'll end up with shit all from our agreement."
"What agreement, Boholt?"
"Well, Yarpen, do we tell the Witcher?"
"Ain't got nothing against it," the dwarf answered.
"There's no more booze,"
Beanpole interjected, turning the demijohn upside down.
"Get some, then. You're the youngest, my lord."
"The agreement was our idea, Geralt, because we aren't hirelings or paid servants, and we won't be having Nidamere send us after that dragon and then toss a few pieces of gold in our direction. The truth is, we'll cope with that dragon without Nidamere, but Nidamere won't cope without us. So, it's clear from that who's worth more and whose share should be bigger. And we put the case fairly. Whoever takes on the dragon in mortal combat and bests it takes half of the treasure hoard. Nidamere, by virtue of his birthright and title, takes a quarter in any event. And the rest, provided they help, will share the remaining quarter between themselves equally. What do you think about that?"
"What does Nidamere think about it?"
"He said neither yes nor no, but he'd better not put up a fight, the whippersnapper. I told you, he won't take on the dragon himself. He has to count on experts, which means us, the Reavers, and Yarpen and his lads. We and no one else will beat the dragon at a sword's length. The rest, including the sorcerers, if they give honest assistance, will share a quarter of the treasure among themselves."
"Who do you include in the rest, apart from the sorcerers?" Dandelion asked with interest.
"Certainly not buskers and poetisters," Yarpen Zigrin cackled. "We include those who put in some work with a battle axe, not a lute."
"Aha," Three Jackdaws said, looking up at the starry sky. "And how will the cobbler Sheepbagger and his rabble be contributing?"
Yarpen Zigrin spat into the campfire, muttering something in dwarven.
"The constabulary from Bearfield know these bloody mountains and will act as guides," Boholt said softly. "Hence it will be fair to allow them a share of the spoils. It's a slightly different matter with the cobbler.
You see, it will go ill if the peasantry become convinced that when a dragon shows up in the land, instead of sending for professionals, they can casually poison it and go back to humping wenches in the long grass. If such a practice became widespread, we'd probably have to start begging. Yes?
That's right, Yarpin added. For which reason, I tell you, something bad ought to